Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. I am your host, Mike Jokum. Frenchie is here. It's IndyCar, and just before we forget, no F1 tomorrow. We are going to take our own F1 summer break and give ourselves a day, a little bit less work this week. Obviously, plenty of Nashville stuff to talk about, maybe a little bit of other news and stuff, who knows. But I wanted to start with get back to our non-racing question to start off the show. And so I am going to a state fair tonight. I've never been to a state fair before. I've been to like one of those like little carnivals, you know, like the kiddie carnivals when you were little with like the amusement rides and dumbass games and whatnot. So I have a feeling I'm in way over my head just based on what I know, because, you know, city boy has never experienced, you know, cows being shown around state fair. So Frenchie, does Virginia or Maryland or wherever you actually live have any sort of state fair type thing that is popular in your area?
Yeah, I used to go actually to the county fair.
Yeah.
Where I grew up in Maryland. So we had a county fair that would happen every summer. And I think it's probably just a miniature scale of the state fair, because we had all the farm animals and everything. And I'm trying to think of what else. They're like bunnies that you can look at, and there are cows, horses. I mean, there's like kind of just animal droppings everywhere. And then a lot of fried foods that you would never have thought about frying.
Yeah, I've been told to try fried Oreos tonight, and that sounds incredible. I've never had fried Oreos before.
They had that at our county fair, and I think I've tried that before. It's surprisingly good for,
yeah.
I didn't think it was going to work.
I've also been told to check out the world's largest pig, which sounds much less exciting than fried Oreos, but I don't know. Maybe I could
How big is it? Do you know?
I have no idea. This is what Cody. Cody said, look at the world's largest pig. I'm like, sounds really boring, but I guess like to say I've done it. Anyway, it should be interesting. And thank you. And thanks to Frenchie for rearranging our schedule for a second straight day and a second straight week so I can go on a date. So, yeah. And for the hard work this weekend.
Only if it goes well, then will I rearrange my schedule.
So if I text you tonight, like it didn't go so well, you're like, no, I'm not going to.
Yeah, then I wouldn't do it again, because it would be worth it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's fair. I can respect that. That's actually makes sense.
Pressure for you to succeed.
Oh boy. All right. Well, on that note, Nashville, what a weekend. It was much hotter than we expected. I said the weather was going to be fine. It was anything but fine, essentially, all weekend. I think this is the first weekend in my racing, I don't know if you want to call it coverage career, that I've had two lightning delays in one weekend. I don't even think when Hickey was traveling with me a couple times, we had two in one weekend. So yeah, we really lucked out with the weather this weekend. I'm going to rant for a minute here, and then we'll get your thoughts, since it's your first time in it was your first time in Nashville. And this isn't so much on the track. This is the layout of walking around. Nashville, the track, probably could use some work on the layout, sure. I don't think it's unsalvageable per se, but yeah, I mean, it needs work. We'll get to the on-track part in a minute here. But walking around, trying to get from the media center, which is on the far side of the Tennessee Titans Stadium underground, to the pit lane is a 15-minute walk. If you want to go out and have lunch at Honda, it's a 25-minute walk. If you want to go to the fan zone, 20-minute walk. Everything is a hike. You have to cross over the one pedestrian bridge. I think there's actually another one now, too. It's just so badly laid out that as people who are working the event, it's really not an enjoyable time to walk around. Like, this is the one race I didn't bother texting anybody. You're like, hey, I want to say hi this weekend. It's just, I'm sorry. If you want to see me, find me in Gateway, because Nashville is just too chaotic to walk around. And like every day you get home, back to the hotel or Airbnb or whatever, and you're just like completely mentally worn out. And I've never wanted to get out of a city quicker than after a 2-hour press conference at the end of Sunday. than Nashville. So it's kind of like Barber before they built the media center, which is another awful location in Barber, was a tent that was kind of like right, I don't know, probably 200 yards behind pit lane. And it wasn't glamorous by any means. It was a little tight, but it was right there. And I don't need anything fancy, like a fancy media center in the Titan Stadium or anything. Just give me a tent. If it's going to be hot, pump some air into it. And just let us be a little bit closer so we don't have to hike miles to get something done. It's really exhausting. I don't know. And like I kind of told you beforehand, like this track is a trek. So now that I've rambled on, what did you think of the working experience?
Well, first, I feel guilty complaining about it because it's kind of a, I would say, a treat or like an honor to be able to get to cover races. But it was probably, in the racetracks that I've experienced, the worst management of just space. Nothing, like you said, was close to each other. So in that heat, I felt really bad for the drivers. I also felt bad for the fans who didn't have anywhere to sort of have refuge. I mean, they had, what, cooling tents, a couple of them, that were pretty full all weekend. But I've never sweat that much, I don't think, not working out. Like, I was, I felt like disgusting. And I hope the people that saw me this weekend don't think that that's what I'm normally like, because I was drenched. It was pretty gross.
Yeah, and listen, thank you. The guys and gals who promote this race and work to set everything up are some of my favorite in the industry, always going out of the way to see what you need. They did try to help with some golf carts to get from, you know, point A to point B in some parts, but I slept a lot on Monday. I mean, it didn't help that I got back at 2:30 in the morning, but It was draining. So on the track, let's talk about that before we talk about the actual race. And Colton Herta had an interesting, or it might have been Brian Herta, that a race will eventually lose its luster if it's all based on luck. Like, you know, Colton Herta breaking a wing early and finishing fifth. Dixon having under tray damage, you know, getting hit from behind and a flat tire and winning the race. And Marcus Ericsson somersaulting through the air last year and winning the race. Great in the moment and, like, really cool for us to, like, see and cover. But at some point they need to do something, whether it's widening that tight kind of section, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 or whatever it is, or, you know, the bridge shots look awesome. The rest of the track, maybe they just need to widen certain points or slow down certain points, because it's just, I mean, you saw that shot of all the wings on the truck afterwards, and like, yeah, okay, you know, some races are going to be a little bit more mayhem than others, but eventually this is just going to become a, like, kind of a laughing stock. Like, it's not enjoy. It's not like the craziness is fun in the moment, but I'm kind of like, I didn't really care for the actual racecraft of the race because it's all just luck, like Brian Herta said.
Yeah, I think it turns into a farce if it's just this unpredictable every single time, because you're not seeing necessarily the best guy winning. I mean, fortunately, the best guy, I mean, the second best all time in IndyCar and definitely the greatest of his generation, Scott Dixon, won this race. So it ended up being a deserving winner. But I mean, based on how many people were able to get their laps back in all those caution periods, you have no idea what's going on or where you're going to cycle at the end of the race. And I don't even think the strategists were able to react to most of that. It was almost, like you said, just completely based on luck.
Yeah, there's really not much strategy involved when you have 9 cautions. There's no long tire runs. There's no fuel saving. You know, you might have had Dixon, you know, got 50 laps on his tires. Part of that is because he's Scott Dixon. A majority of that is probably because he's Scott Dixon, but also
without, like, rear downforce, which is incredible. Right. Like, he had a loose car, and he was able to somehow save the tires.
So, like, I'm not taking anything away from Scott Dixon, but also when you run 45% of the race under yellow flag, roughly, maybe a couple percentage less than that, it's also easy to save your tires at certain points. And I'm not don't want to take anything away from Scott Dixon. He passed Mario Andretti for second on all-time wins. But, like, the strategy standpoint is just completely out the window.
Yeah, it was something that I have never experienced before. I think it was even crazier than last year, in my opinion. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, you know, the difference is, like, last year, nobody knew what to expect.
Yeah.
So you're just like, oh, my God, this is crazy. But maybe next year they'll figure it out. And, like, this year it was like, oh, my God, nobody figured it out. This is completely batshit insane, and we haven't figured anything out. So it was, like, a different type of crazy to me.
I want to come back to something you said, actually, about possibly slowing down parts of the track.
Yeah.
I don't remember where I heard it, but probably in one of the press conference interviews that someone said, one of the drivers, that we might actually need to speed up these sections because how slow those cars are going in that really tight twisty section, it invites people just like going down the inside. Like you don't have to try that hard to just like break a little bit later.
Yeah. Respect. I can't listen. They're the experts. I'm not. So if speeding it up is the answer, sure. Yeah.
I'm not sure anyone knows, but that was just something I remember hearing.
Yeah. No, totally, totally cool with that. You know, I feel like something has to be figured out because eventually after, you know, another year or two of total mayhem, will you see teams maybe pull, I don't know, like pull back and just kind of play it safe and start last and just kind of hang around? And then, like, that's not really racing. It's just like running hot laps and waiting for other people to crash, and then it's boring. But I guess we should talk about the actual race. Obviously, plenty of things happened. Alex Rossi spun like six times early and still finished fourth. So good for him to back up his win with another thing. Elio had a rough day. He finished somewhere not great. 13th.
Yeah.
Then we had the kerfuffle number one. The caution summary just lists multiple cars. And I don't remember. So obviously Dixon was involved because he had the floor damage. Pato was involved because he got his gearbox knocked out of the race. Simona was involved. Dalton Kellett was involved. Will Power was involved. I think Will Power slowed to avoid something in front of him, and then Pato hit him, and then somebody hit Pato.
I think it was Rahal, right? He was involved
in
that.
Yeah, Graham was involved in that. And then, so that was that. That was, you're, at that point, you're like, all right, you know, one big incident, whatever. Then we have Devlin and Sato, and I rewatched it a couple times. I'm curious for your take. I don't know if you've rewatched it or the Devlin and Sato incident, and I can chat first if you need to like look at it real quick.
I'll look at it again. I don't remember really seeing. There were so many incidents in this race that I'm not even recalling.
That's why I have the. I don't always look at the IndyCar box score when we're recording, because I can pretty much remember what happened to a degree, but. Yeah, this one you cannot. So it was almost like the Kirkwood, Malukas, and then Newgarden, Grosjean. I think it was that same section. Sato is on. I think Sato essentially just gets shoved into the wall by Devlin.
That's what it looks like.
And it doesn't look like
Devlin's on the inside in the corner. And
yeah,
he just
looks like
Sato in the wall on the outside.
Yeah, he makes no effort to slow down or change his line. Sato wants to go after Devlin, and one of the safety workers held him back. I really wish he didn't, because I would have loved to see a little melee. Not that I advocate.
Are you
for
saying
that.
Little because they're the two shortest drivers
series? I did not mean to do that. No, as soon as I said that,
I wouldn't
I was
mess
like,
with Sato. I just really don't think like he seems like somebody who probably is way stronger than his size.
Yeah,
would tell you he is.
Yeah. 100%.
I mean, Devlin boxes, so I don't think that would go well for either of them. But
it'd be a good match. Yeah. But yeah, listen, I don't really like, you know, how like NASCAR has fights all the time and whatnot, but I think in this case
that would have been the perfect cherry on top of this event.
Exactly. So I don't think there was a penalty called on that one. No, there was not.
The penalty situation in this race was mind-boggling. I mean, it's kind of consistent with what we've seen all season of, like, obvious penalties aren't called, but there were some, like, with the Kirkwood Malukas incident that I'm sure we're going to get to, that was...
Yep.
I just didn't understand.
Yep. I think that's... That is next on my caution summary list. And mind you, because this race was a total crapshoot, it's hard to talk about a lot of what actually happened because it was just luck and good driving by Scott Dixon and Scott McLaughlin to go from 15th to 2nd. So, you know, shout out to that. But
and Lundgaard looked really good for a while, too, until he fell back towards the end.
I think he had some sort of issue or something because all of a sudden on the radio, he was like, I can't keep up. I'm like, okay, well, you know, still good for him to finish 8th. And he's got a little bit of a cushion now, I think like 40 points on co-host Malukas on Rookie of the Year. That being said, Kyle Kirkwood and David Malukas. To me, I get why guys make the move there on the left or on the inside. Totally get attempting to make the move. But when you make the move, like the big difference to me between this incident and the Newgarden incident is Newgarden was fully alongside of Grosjean and had the inside line. And yeah, he gives Grosjean the rough treatment and runs him out of room. Can't argue that one. Kirkwood goes super late on the brakes, kind of taps the wall on the left, and then sends him and Malukas into the outside wall on the right. I have said to you, Frenchie, many times, like, Kyle Kirkwood will put it together. Like, it's okay. He's a talented driver. He's had a rough 3 months now, and it's definitely concerning that I think he's trying way too hard. I think he just needs to relax, like early in the year when nobody expected anything from Kyle Kirkwood. Just go out and nobody expect, just go out and drive. Because I think he's a talented kid, but he made a big mistake on this one. And my second point, let's before we talk about race control, let's talk about Grosjean and Newgarden.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Pit Pass Moto, sponsored by Moto America, is the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. From candid interviews with the top names in racing to providing insights into the trends and trendsetters driving the motorcycle industry, we have you covered. New episodes are available every Thursday at pitpassmoto.com and on your favorite podcast app. Ride on!
Any thoughts on that?
I think that move, Joseph gave Grosjean the option to, if he wanted to back out, he could have still made that corner. Whereas if I'm looking at the Kirkwood Malukas incident, I think just how deep Kirkwood sent it in there and there really wasn't space for his car. I don't even know if he would have made it through the corner on his own had Malukas not been there.
Yeah, it was a weird angle.
So that's what I think is completely different is Newgarden was making what I consider to be a legitimate pass, and Grosjean had a choice to make of whether he backs out, and of course he's not going to back out. So, you know, what ended up happening, I think, is a racing incident, and it's on both of them. Majority on Joseph, obviously, but,
yeah,
you know, when you're Grosjean, I think, unfortunately, this is how people are going to race you because of the way that you've come across in the paddock and the way you've raced other people. We've seen how rough he's been, and I don't think anybody's given him the benefit of the doubt. They're just going to send it when they see a space.
Yeah, and I think judging by Newgarden's comments afterwards and Marcus Ericsson said something, Colton Herdov kind of said something. You know, this isn't just like Graham Rahal or Alex Rossi has a problem with Grosjean. It's a lot of people. And there are other drivers who have told you and I, yeah, it's tough. He's kind of a jerk to race against. So there's clearly no respect given. So he's not going to get respect when on these benefit of the doubt sort of situations here. You know, he's going to get raced hard. So he's got to, like, he's got to deal with it. You know, stop throwing your helmet against the ground when you're walking to the safety car. Like, you can be angry. It's okay. Like, it's all right to be frustrated that you, you know, wrecked out or got wrecked, whatever you want to call it. Newgarden was definitely in rare form Sunday night on social media.
Yeah.
That was quite a scene, but
he's usually not someone you would consider to be a dirty or aggressive driver either.
Yeah.
So this was, I think, a rare moment, and people are just reacting very intensely to what they saw because he's like the happiest go luckiest seeming guy.
Yeah.
You know, not Elio level, but I mean, he's kind of a, I would say, doesn't take himself too seriously. And he was going off on Sunday night. I mean, maybe it's the heat. Heat makes people cranky. Made us cranky. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it was just not, I don't think he didn't want to be there. I don't think he understood why he was so far down when he had speed, and it just didn't go his way when he's in the championship hunt.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about race control. All year we've preached, as long as they're consistent, it's totally fine. I get it. You know, whether they call penalties or don't call penalties, you know, consistency is key. So Kirkwood and Malukas have their incident. I am walking back to the media center, or I think I had just gotten into the media center post-race, and David Malukas has gotten an avoidable contact penalty for his incident with Kyle Kirkwood. And I know I'm not the smartest person in the media room, so I went to Steve Wittick, who is to our left, who went to Nathan Brown. And I was like, what, did I miss something? And neither of them could understand it either. How in the hell is David Malukas supposed to avoid contact there? It makes absolutely no sense. He got, and in the grand scheme of things, he drops from 18th to 19th. Not a huge deal. And so, you know, the punishment is not what I'm angry about, but it's, how does race control determine that is avoidable? If that's avoidable contact, then Grosjean should get avoidable contact for getting raced hard by Newgarden, but he didn't, and there was no avoidable contact penalties. Let me
Sato too.
Yeah, Sato should have gotten one. Let me look at the penalties here. Those were the only avoidable contact penalties. There was a couple
Colton
of jumps
in the incident with Dalton. Yeah, I mean, if the guy on the outside is getting the penalty and go like for going into the wall, then that those are who's getting penalties.
So how do you determine? Jack Harvey got one on the last lap of the race, lap 80. I don't even
remember seeing that.
Yeah, I don't think we saw it, and so he got dropped from 9th to 10th. You know, whatever, but. So in either of those cases, how do you determine that that's avoidable contact, but nothing else that happened in the shit show of the first 78 laps, or when did Malukas crash? In the first 62 laps was not avoidable contact. It just makes no. This is so off the wall and not consistent with anything they've done this year. It's just so frustrating. And I know we might be a little biased in this case, but I would be this frustrated regardless of who is involved because it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, the lack of logic behind it is pretty infuriating. I can't even imagine how Malukas feels about it. I'm sure he won't really be able to tell us because he's a diplomatic guy. But yeah, I don't know what's going on here because I think the lack of penalties and then this weird kind of blaming who I would consider to be the victim in this case, is almost inviting guys to race really, really hard and just opens it up because you know that you're not going to be the one to get a penalty. They're not even going to call something or they're going to call the victim.
Yeah, it's just so frustrating how, you know, maybe race control hasn't been as consistent and now I'm just realizing it, but I don't necessarily think that's the case, but It's really frustrating, and it's very unfortunate. Malukas has been hosed by race control a couple times this year already. So, yes, I have not even attempted to talk to him about that in the little I've talked to him since the race ended, because I don't need to I don't know, pour any salt into the wounds, but
yeah, touchy subject maybe.
Yeah, just a little bit. Before we continue, I forgot to do this at the beginning of the episode. So when you are as tired and cranky as we are after Nashville, make sure you get your coffee from Java House.
Yes.
JavaHouse.com. If you are not in the Indy area, they have a couple locations in Indy, including downtown, Carmel, and Broad Ripple. I feel like there's a fourth location, but I could be wrong. And so, yeah, if you can't go to JavaHouse.com. Use promo code PITLANE10 for 10% off the order. There's a bunch of orders that came in this weekend, so thank you to whoever you may be who are placing orders. Your support is appreciated, and the coffee is fantastic. And yeah, so we have any news?
Hold on.
Before we get to the news, predictions.
Yeah, I have those right here.
Okay, go ahead.
So it was a dismal weekend for both of us, just because I think the chaos was impossible to react to or just predict what was going to happen. So let's see. I had my picks were McLaughlin, who finished second, Malukas, who unfortunately finished 20th, and then Felix, who finished 7th. So my average finish was a 9.6. And you had Award, who unfortunately looked really fast all weekend and is probably out of the championship at this point, but finished 24th. Herta, who finished 5th magically. As Connor Daly would say, it was like a wizard kind of drive right there. And lastly, you had Ilot, who finished 15th. So your average finish was a 14.6, which I wouldn't say is that bad given how chaotic this race was.
Yeah, I knew when Pato got hit early, I remembered I hadn't picked. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a rough one. And yeah, so, before we get to news, I guess we should do another sponsor read. And I don't have the thing handy. So go to athleticgreens.com/emerging to get your 5 free travel packs of Athletic Greens.
Get some travel packs instead of doing what I do.
yeah. Go on there and order it. And a year's supply of vitamin D. Take control of your health and buy Athletic Greens. It's very good tasting. I had the stuff that you left. I mixed it in with some sugar-free lemonade, which was pretty good. And it's endorsed.
It mixes
by,
well with stuff.
Yeah, it does. It really does. It's endorsed by athletes like Lewis Hamilton. No artificial flavoring or colorings in it. It is all natural. It is vegan and keto and all the other fun diets that you may or may not subscribe to. So athleticgreens.com/emerging.
Check adaptogen. It
out. Adaptogens.
That word.
Yeah, adaptogens. Yeah. I don't know
gotta
what
that
word,
word in there.
Means still, but adaptogens, yes.
Probably contractually obligated to say that.
Science, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, news-wise.
So there's not really that much, I think, in the news, except that, number one, Simone DiSilvestro and Peretta, what do they call Peretta Autosport, will be back, actually, for a fourth race this season at the season finale at Laguna.
Yeah.
So, which is pretty cool. They have not announced who their title sponsor will be, and unfortunately this weekend did not go so well for Simona, but hopefully Laguna will be a better way to close out the season. I'm looking forward to seeing what they are able to put together for 2023 and beyond.
Yeah, and speaking of Laguna, there's a strong chance I may not go just because of how insanely expensive flights are still.
Oh yeah.
But if not, we are going to host a viewing party here, and friend of the show Sawyer Sparks is organizing it, and I'm just going to help promote it, so I may end up doing that, so I don't have to go west for 5 days. And yeah, so more to come on that. Even if I end up in Laguna, I'll still share details of the watch party. It'll be at some bar in the Indy area. That's about as much as I know on that one, so I literally cannot comment anymore.
You've got time. It's on September 11th. We're like a month away.
Yeah. So, I guess
There's Pillow update, but
yeah, it's going through the legal system. It looks like even more of a kerfluffle than it did.
They're supposed to be maybe meeting for a mediation either today or tomorrow. So it may be resolved through this mediation. I don't know how confident I feel about that, but it's kind of good that at least the two parties are willing to go through the mediation. We saw Chip actually, I don't know, I don't know what he did, pat him on the back and actually say something to Alex Palou for the first time since about, what, was it June? Middle of June?
July 12th?
July
12th, something
okay,
like that.
Okay, so it's like a month, that they hadn't really spoken. So that's a good sign. I mean, I don't really think he's going to be back in that car, but maybe the situation is getting a little bit less contentious or hostile.
Probably not.
I like to try to be optimistic here, but we just don't know what's going on. I mean, it's incredible how Palou can just continue to pull out good results while this stuff's going on, because he just compartmentalizes it somehow and just goes out there and does his job.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he's had a heck of a run right now, and I keep saying, like, one bad result and he might, you know, have a little bit of a mental lashing out sort of thing, but he keeps proving good results, top fives, top, you know, podium and whatnot, and he held it together pretty well through some tough press conference questions where people were trying to eke like answers out of him that weren't going to be answered. So, you know, good for him for hanging tough. And
he's not a dumb guy by any means. So
there's
a method to all this that's going on. As much as we don't see it, I don't think he's just going out on a limb for no reason.
No, he definitely knows what he's doing. I'm 100% convinced. It might be, you know, borderline arrogant, but I know he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, agreed.
So I guess that's it. We don't really have, we'll save.
There's Formula E finales this weekend. That's races going on. It's
what
in time's
Seoul,
that?
At like midnight or 1 a.m. or something?
I have not looked at the times yet. I also know that there's like major flooding going on in Seoul right now.
Right.
So I don't know if that's going to impact the finale at all.
So
hopefully
we might have speedboat finale instead of Formula E.
Yeah, exactly. It's ridiculous how much water I've seen in some of the Formula E drivers' Instagram posts.
Yeah, I think you sent me one of those, didn't you?
I think I did, yeah. Because it looked like there was a river flowing down the street. Like, it was probably 3-ish feet of water on, like, a city street.
So if it's in Seoul, Formula E.
That's got to be almost 24 hours ahead or something. I don't know. 18 hours.
Yeah, I am pulling. I'm on the Formula E website right now.
Not the easiest to navigate. No offense to them, but
no, their
it's
website
not the easiest
is,
to find.
Website really is awful.
Where to watch.
So it looks like qualifying is Saturday at 11:40 p.m. No, I'm sorry. Okay. 2:40 a.m.
Okay.
And the race is at 7 a.m. Saturday?
Oh, I mean, if you're an early riser, you can catch that, but I'm going to record it and watch
Same
it.
Same on Sunday. Yeah, I'm not waking up at 7 a.m.
Is it on CBS or CBS Sports?
The website doesn't really tell. Let me click on this little TV button.
I wish we could tell you guys.
Yeah, this is real time research. Okay, here we go. CBS HQ qualifying. Oh, Eastern time. All right. So ignore those times from before. Looks like it's a little CBS online. It's very late in the night or very early in the morning. E-pre 2:30 a.m. to 4 a.m.
Yikes.
Is the thing listed as E-pre, so not 7 a.m. I don't know. It's very, very... I will not be awake. I will definitely be recording that one.
Yeah. It's the only racing that I know of that's going on this weekend. I mean, I'm sure someone will tell us that there's like an obscure sports car series going on and get really angry at us, because there seems to be a certain group of people that like to do that. But, you know, sorry to offend you by not realizing that those races, there's only so much we can pay attention to and cover. I'm sorry. We love IMSA, but.
In order to be professional, I also won't look at my phone at all this weekend. I'm just, you know, not going to look at my phone once weekend.
Yeah. The fact that you would ever think to do that in the middle of your professional duties is
crazy.
Such a bad look.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
It totally ruins our image.
Gonna have to retire now. And on that note, we should probably wrap it up before we completely spiral off the rails here. Frenchie, my date, says thank you for rearranging the schedule. She wholeheartedly appreciates it, almost word for word what she said. So
glad I could be of service.
Thank you. And I will report back on my state fair findings next week. Next week we'll be previewing Gateway, and what should be a busy weekend in St. Louis, Friday and Saturday. So, yeah, everybody have a lovely weekend. of racing if you watch it.
Have you ever wanted to know how to win a Formula One Grand Prix? I mean, really know. Know about the driver tactics from the cockpit, the strategy calls from the pit wall, and even the mind games in the paddock. There's a lot more that goes into winning a Grand Prix than just 90 minutes of racing. So every week on the F1 Strategy Report, we're taking a deep dive into the decisions that shape every result. Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and every week I'm joined by an expert guest from the paddock to talk through the big calls that won the race and the missteps that resulted in bitter defeat. Before every race, we'll look back at the previous year's result and consult the current form guide, and we'll be in your feed after every Grand Prix dissecting the outcome and what it means for the championship. So for your regular hit of Formula One analysis, subscribe to the F1 Strategy Report wherever you get your favourite podcasts. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast on the Evergreen Podcasts Network. My name's Michael Laminato, and I'll catch you after the checkered flag.